Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Barbara Cassette, who is a writer on international affairs and the United Nations correspondent at The Nation magazine and author of several books on Asia. She was the New York Times chief correspondent in Southeast Asia and South Asia from 1984 to 1991, and has also been a diplomatic correspondent in Washington and a reporter in Central America, the Caribbean, and Canada, as well as the Times bureau chief at the United Nations. Barbara, the UN, of course, both the U.S. Senate and the House have voted overwhelmingly to deny an Iranian diplomat a seat on the UN representing Iran. And this appointment, the White House has already labeled as not viable. So if we get to the point where the State Department denies Ambassador Aboutaleb a visa to enter this country, and presumably all that will take now is the president's signature on this bill, isn't this likely to complicate nuclear negotiations underway with Iran and also undercut Iran's President Rouhani's authority, since Rouhani is close to this diplomat who, by the way, has already been Iran's ambassador to Belgium, the European Union, Italy, and Australia?
Well, yes, the first part of your question first, which is that, one can look at it this way. Whether it undercuts the talks going on in Geneva now between an Iranian delegation and a Western delegation, Europeans and Americans, it also raises the question of whether this is exactly what the people who have pushed this bill want. Many of them apparently, what I can't explain is why it was unanimous, or that is to say bipartisan, in the Senate. But it is sort of one of the new ways of attacking Obama's foreign policy by trying to scuttle this this arrangement with Iran and go back to a more confrontational stance. So yes, it will complicate things, maybe. However, it all depends on whether the Iranians react in a negative way. They have obviously criticized these moves in Congress. And they will be criticizing it even more if the president signs on to this. But that's not certain yet. And the it'll be a test, really, of the Iranians also, how much they want to keep these talks moving, as much as it will be a test of how Obama plays this if he's forced into signing it.
Well, there's been some rumors for some time that the supreme leader in Iran has given Rouhani a very short leash, and that he only allowed him to win the election because of the overwhelming public support for Rouhani. So is there any sense or any evidence of what games are being played on the Iranian side? Clearly, this situation has been created by the hawks in the Senate and the House, who have wanted to scuttle this deal from the beginning. And AIPAC, the Israeli lobby, have made a tremendous effort to push through a bill to basically scuttle their talks. So far, the White House has managed to hold off that attack. But this looks like a backdoor attack that they found. We can get into the issue about what's happening in terms of Americans sabotaging this deal. But do you think there are people in Iran who also want to sabotage the deal?
I think there are. And I'm obviously not reporting from there, so I'm not an expert at all. But it's certainly well known among all the experts in this country and the reporting coming out of Iran that it's a tentative situation there as well. That there is, every once in a while, the Ayatollah Khamenei weighs in with some extremely intemperate blast against the West and America in general. And what I don't think everybody is totally clear about now is whether this was Rouhani's appointment alone or whether he was given the go-ahead to do it, which is probably more likely given the situation. But again, some of these things are not well known because there isn't really much known about because the Iranians don't allow a lot of free reporting. There's not that much known about exactly where the seesaw is tipping right now. So this if this plays out with an American rejection of the Iranians' visa, you know, we'll see whether it's viewed as a triumphant victory for the hardliners, or, you know, we told you so kind of thing, or whether the Iranians can handle this in a way that doesn't damage Rouhani. And I think it's everybody here is kind of in a tentative position.
So, Barbara Crosette, in terms of the UN that you cover, what do people around the UN think of this? I mean, we were just waiting to have Carla de Gaulle on before you, and for some reason or other, we haven't been able to get her. And she's written a book about a country, Pakistan, that's an ally that we've given about $30 billion to since 9/11, and they're responsible for basically the deaths of 2,300 Americans in Afghanistan and another 1,000 NATO troops. And they, the book reveals that they've been harboring the world's number one terrorist, Osama bin Laden, that the head of the ISI knew was in the place where the SEAL Team 6 eventually found him and killed him. If that's not a country or a government that's in bed with terrorists, I don't know what is. But the charge against this guy is, and this is what the House and the Senate have voted on, is that he's a terrorist and he has to be denied entry. I mean, we're not denying entry to Pakistani diplomats, but we're denying entry to this guy based upon the fact, apparently, that he translated for the hostages who took over the U.S. Embassy back in 1979.
Yeah, he was. I mean, there are a lot of other diplomats, and including some former American diplomats, who see nothing wrong in them. This is why it seems quite obvious that this is a blown-up, a stunt, if you want, or a campaign, you know, to further undercut Obama and to make the point that the U.S. shouldn't be talking to Iran at all. You know, it's a different thing for one person, of course, to have been in a group of students, the pictures of him at the time of, not at the time of the takeover. He was brought in to handle press conferences. He's a linguist. I mean, he's well-trained to be a diplomat, apart from his experience subsequently. They just hooked onto this, taking a piece out of history and making it, and blowing it up into a big issue. But this doesn't mean Iran as a country hasn't support. I mean, we know about Iran's support of Hezbollah, of other organizations around the region, and we know that the Iranians are not trusted as a nation. This is a different thing, and it puts it in another context. The Saudis and we know about Israel. There are other countries around the region that are very wary of Iran for its ties with terrorism. So if it comes to the United Nations as an issue, Iranians aren't going to have as many friends as one might think they'd have. There's not going to be the level, I don't think, of a criticism of the United States. It will be fought on legal grounds. This is to say, has the United States broken an agreement with the United Nations dating back into the 1947, I think, that they cannot deny visas to representatives of foreign governments because the UN is international territory. So that's more or less where I think the fighting will come down. I mean, the criticism, the debate, and all that. And it will have to be in the General Assembly. The U.S. will never let anything happen in the Security Council.
Well, it does seem that the examples have been pretty obvious for some time that the U.S. Hasn't gone to the mat, and they haven't objected to Yasser Arafat addressing the U.N. with a pistol strapped to his hip, President Castro of Cuba, and the Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. There is, I believe, some evidence was there that there was one person that was denied entry.
Well,
an Iranian diplomat, I meant to say.
Yeah, there was one. I mean, diplomats are sometimes defined as persona non grata and sent out, or they're denied visas. I mean, there are two levels here. A lot of those people you just mentioned are heads of state, heads of government. That's a different thing from being a potential ambassador. And the Iranians, I was just reading somewhere, have not really pushed this hard yet. This has been discussed for, I think, several months now. The rumor was that this was the man who was going to be named, and that they were not expecting this. I don't know that it was considered, that this nomination was considered a provocation. I mean, some people have made that charge. But people in the diplomatic world who know the situation just disprove that. They think that this just came out of left field in the U.S. Congress. Never mind that. The point is, yes, Arafat was denied a visa to speak. He's not a head of state or government, was not at the time, and the Palestinians had a lower observer status than they do now, and the United Nations moved the entire General Assembly to Geneva in 1988, and they had their meeting there, and he spoke there. So that was clearly the most outrageous opinionated word, but it was a case where the whole General Assembly had to decamp to Geneva to avoid or to show their displeasure at an American veto of a visa. Now, last year, the president of Sudan, who is wanted by the International Criminal Court for what he did in Darfur and other things, they delayed his visa. They never denied it to come to speak in the General Assembly. He is the president of a country. I think the U.S. has been pretty good on the heads of state. Some of them don't come here because they're afraid of in the case of Omar Bashir from Sudan, of some kind of an arrest and being shipped off to the International Criminal Court. Not by Americans necessarily, because the U.S. doesn't belong to the court. But, you know, there have been others who are afraid to come up to New York for fear of demonstrations, protests, perhaps even violence. And they stay away because that's what they decide. Whereas in this case, it's just an ambassador. It's not a head of government.
Well, again, I'm speaking with Barbara Cassette, who's a writer on international affairs and the United Nations correspondent at The Nation magazine and author of several books on Asia. She was a New York Times chief correspondent in Southeast Asia and South Asia from 1984 to 1991, and has also been a diplomatic correspondent in Washington and a reporter in Central America, the Caribbean and Canada, as well as the Times bureau chief at the UN. So the double standard, though, appears to be here in terms of the actual what they're trying to pin on this guy as being a terrorist, because he was a translator for the students who took over the U.S. embassy back in 1979 in Tehran. And the L.A. Times, for example, in an editorial is titled "Iran's UN Envoy Isn't a Threat," pointed out that as a young leftist in 1970, West Germany, Joschka Fischer took part in violent street demonstrations and was photographed attacking a policeman. But decades later, he served as foreign minister of United Germany. What is are the UN community sort of pointing out this double standard?
Well, no, I don't. I think everybody understands what it is. Yeah. Jessica Fisher was not attacking the American embassy. They have seized on this. They kept fanning this thing. If you go back to square one, which is what you did at the beginning, they just don't want the U.S. to open any kind of serious relations with Iran. And so this came along, you know, sort of like manna from heaven, where they could grab this little thing and run with it. And in any other less partisan situation, the long-term interests of the United States would be to talk Iran down from its nuclear position, rather than raise the level of confrontation. The Mideast and West Asia are already in such turmoil, and because of a whole lot of things. So, you know, I don't know about double standard. I just think that this was just a unique opportunity to go after the president. Now, as I said earlier, what is distressing from an outsider's point of view about partisanship is that Democrats would go along with this. And whether this shows that the Democrats are also not happy with the Iranian policy, whether they're not happy with Obama, the Democrats who let this thing just go through, you know, sort of automatically and today through the House of Representatives, is another question, and that one is not really getting examined enough.
But, Barbara Crosette, President Obama is not the only president that's going to be have egg on his face or be humiliated in this situation. What about President Rouhani? This ambassador is a close friend and a protege of Rouhani's. So doesn't it undercut his authority to deny his choice as an ambassador to represent Iran at the United Nations?
Well, you'd have to go a step beyond and say, really, does it undercut his position at home? That's does one thing, but is he going to allow this to affect the way he deals with the United States? And that's, in the great long scheme of history, that's the more important decision, and that's going to be a difficult decision for him. If the U.S. denies a visa, whether he then gets pushed very hard by the hardliners, that's another story. But for Rouhani, it would be a blow, and it would be, quite frankly, judging from what diplomats are saying, a completely unfair blow. But that's what was intended, I think, in Washington. But anyway, it would be an unfair blow, but then it puts huge, huge emphasis on Rouhani and how he now maneuvers either out of this or whatever. But he seems to be intent on carrying on these negotiations. And in Geneva today, you know, people were trying to play down this, you know, that this wasn't going to derail the talks. They have a few more months. They were working on a final document, or at least, a semi-final document. And so so it puts him in a very, very tenuous situation. Obviously much more than it would do for Obama, because Obama and John Kerry will just carry on with their policy if they can. But Rouhani is going to have to make some very difficult decisions if this visa ban goes through, I think. And, just go back to one other thing, double standards. There was a huge outpouring against the Shah of Iran when he wanted to come to the U.S. for medical treatment. You'll remember he did actually was allowed, and then he was basically denied entry into the United States, and he died more or less in complete opprobrium. The American people were completely against, or at least more or less against that. So it's not just. They were against the Shah. Then they were against the people who took over after the Shah. The public opinion here has fluctuated, and it isn't always logical, depending on the feeling of the moment. And I think now, with so much turmoil going on in Syria and of course North Africa, which is a distant, but in Lebanon now under threat with Hezbollah and other places in the region. It's a different situation now than it was then, and people are very wary of giving Iran any more room to threaten the neighbors. Today, there was the other day a long piece about what we're not looking at is their missile systems. I mean, forget for the moment the nuclear warheads, but they've got thousands of missiles. Now, you have to sort of walk it back like they did with Russia. When the days were better, start limiting all kinds of armaments if that's possible. But anyway, it's I think Rouhani has got a big problem.
Well, Barbara Crosette, I thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Barbara Crosette, who's a writer on international affairs and the United Nations correspondent at The Nation magazine and author of several books on Asia. She was the New York Times chief correspondent in Southeast Asia and South Asia from 1984 to 1991, and has also been a diplomatic correspondent in Washington and a reporter in Central America, the Caribbean, and Canada, as well as the Times bureau chief at the United Nations. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about the issues raised in this devastating new book, The Wrong Enemy, American Afghanistan, 2001 to 2014.